Well, here it is. It's Friday. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. It's Bill and it's Wendy. Thrilled that you're listening. Wendy, a happy, happy International Women's Day to you and to Jasmine and our producer and, of course, to Mary and everybody listening.
Right back at you.
Yeah. Oh, thank you, Wendy. That's very kind of you. That's very kind of you. How will you celebrate this International Women's Day?
I will not. I don't have any
idea.
You're
not celebrating it? Wendy.
Every day is International Women's Day for me.
Will you go to the International House of Pancakes?
That's a great idea, Bill.
Do you know there's an International Men's Day, too?
Isn't that every other day?
Oh, come
exactly
on.
What I said. Guys, my son looked it up because I told my kids, happy International Women's Day. He's like, what do you mean? What about Men's Day? And he looked it up. It's November 19th.
Oh, right around the corner.
Yes.
Boy, that gets unnoticed.
I know it existed.
Isn't that the day you're supposed to give up smoking pot? What was that? The National Smokeout Day?
Oh, the Great
Day?
American Smokeout.
Remember that?
Yes. I think it was cigarettes, not pot.
It was cigarettes, but
you can
Mary,
smoke pot.
Oh. You're still allowed to, Mary. You're fine.
Oh, thanks.
You're
I was just worried.
No, you're okay. We learned some very sad news that Marshall Brodeen, who certainly holds a place in Chicago TV history and in magic history.
I have to find my TV magic cards in honor of him. They're still at my mom's house.
Now, if I remember right, it was TV magic cards. There was also TV mystery cards. And I thought there was a third incarnation as well.
Really?
They all did kind of similar things
where you
tap the deck. They all changed to your card.
I was really good at card tricks because of the TV magic cards.
Yeah. He made it
easy.
He even said in the ad, so simple anyone could do it, and he was looking right at us when
even
he said
us.
It. Even you, Bill and Wendy, he said. Dave Plyer is on the line, longtime friend of Marshall Brodeen. Hi, Dave. How are you?
What's going on, guys?
We're very sad
so
about
sorry.
This news.
It is very sad, and you know, here's a guy that did 3,000 Bozo shows, and that's how we kind of know him best, obviously, but then it was all those commercials. I mean, he did commercials from the 1970s on. It's really how he built his fortune over the years.
He became a magician when he was in his teens, right?
Yeah, he was in his teens, and he was performing regularly in, like, Chicago's Riverview Amusement Park. He was at the Magic Lounge in Cicero. I think he was actually in the Army for a little bit, too, and when he came back, he kind of became a hypnotist, and he was doing that more than the magic himself. And then in the very early 60s, he bought a costume, like an Arabian Nights costume, for a commercial he was doing, or for a trade show for American Gas Company. And it was, he was doing magic, and it was the magic of gas. This is what they called it.
I might have looked at other titles before I went with that one, but all right.
Right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then he started performing on Bozo Circus. And at some point, I think he appeared in the costume, and Mr. Ned Locke kind of encouraged him to do the show more regularly, and he actually encouraged him to do that famous commercial we kind of all remember.
So the timeline was he was already playing Wizzo on Bozo Circus when he would do the commercials for TV magic cards?
Yeah, I think he already made some appearances on the show in the late 1960s, and then it was 1970 that he did that TV magic card commercial.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought he was already done with Bozo when we saw the TV magic cards.
Yeah, I think so.
No. Is that right? No, because they would show that commercial during Bozo Circus, right, Dave?
Right. TV magic cards started in the 70s and went through the entire show. He played Wizzo until like 1994.
Wow.
I hate to admit, I know him better from the TV magic cards.
Than as Wizzo?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
And just so you know, you can get TV magic cards at Hobby Lobby for $5.99.
Still.
I just looked it up.
Still available.
You can actually get the magic show kit because there was a full kit
at the
Broadcast Museum. We have some of those still left in our gift shop. And I don't know if they're selling them anymore, but we do have we do have some stock of them at the Broadcast Museum on State Street at museum.tv.
I
want to check that out.
Dave, earlier today on Steve's show, they were running some audio of Marshall Brodeen. And it's that famous, you know, as he would hold up the Stone of Zanzibar, the magical amulet, he would hold it up and he would say, duty, duty, duty. We may have audio of that. Hold on a sec. But I was thinking to myself.
I have different audio, if I could, quickly while we're waiting for that.
Yeah.
Stand by.
Hi, I'm Marshall Brodeen, a professional magician. You know, most magic tricks are easy once you know the secret. Now, take magic cards. You don't have to be a magician to perform all kinds of amazing card tricks because it works by itself. Have someone take a card, place it back in the deck, Tap the deck, it comes to the top. Put it back in the middle, and it's back on top of
How about that?
That's amazing.
I totally remember that commercial, almost word for word.
Well, they played it nonstop.
Yeah.
All right, here's the line he's probably most famous for. Let's all listen. Doody doody doody. So I was thinking, if I was a kid and I'm driving with my parents today and they're playing that, you just go, okay, let me get this straight. It was a guy, he was dressed as a wizard, and he would just say duty, 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 and you were that was entertaining? And the answer is yes. For a long time, that was very entertaining.
I will tell you, Dean's tribute this morning, I mean, if you go to WGNTV.com, the video tribute is absolutely fabulous. I mean, some great highlights, but the most famous one was when he told Bozo that... if you wanted to touch the stone of Zanzibar, and he said, "You're about half stone. I'm about half stone myself."
Wow, very progressive.
A lot of times was on that show, right?
Very, very progressive. He was quite a, and I know you know this, Dave, because you were friends with him for years and years and years. He had an amazing collection of all things magic, all kinds of posters and magic tricks and everything. Were you lucky enough to have seen his collection?
Oh, yeah, many times. In fact, him and his wife, Mary, first of all, condolences to Mary. I know she, you know, Marshall had Alzheimer's, you know, disease and was diagnosed some years ago and made a very difficult decision some years ago to put him in a better place for care. But, you know, I was looking at this, there's like 5 million people have the disease. You know, few of us will ever be untouched by it. And, you know, it's really hard to kind of take that care and give it to somebody else for a loved one that requires 24/7 attention. And they always opened up their home to friends, and his museum in his basement was really kind of broken up into 3 parts. He had one side of his basement that was all Riverview, because he was a Riverview, he was a carnival barker, and he had bought over time a lot of the games of chance and the machines that were there, and he had posters, and I mean his the breadth of his collection was absolutely incredible. Then there was a little area that he had, you know, his costumes, various costumes from Wizzo and pictures and portraits and props that he had from the show. And I know he had a lot of videotape, like VHS tapes of the show there as well. And then on the other side, which was the largest part, was the magic collection himself. Like he actually had, actual artifacts from Houdini that he had purchased some years ago, but it was really a museum of all the cards and magic tricks that he created for Siegfried and Roy and so many other magicians.
Such an amazing collection. Do we know what will become of it, Dave?
You know, I know Mary and Marshall had moved out of that house, so I think they packed up a lot of that after he went into the Alzheimer's facility.
Yeah.
But I haven't had much discussion with her about the collection.
The phone became a little echoey because Dean has called in.
So here's what happened. I get in my car because I'm headed to the airport right now, as I am apt to do all the time. I get in the car, I turn on the car, the radio comes on, and the first thing I hear is Bill going, doody doody doo.
I do that every day, Dean, not just today. That's every day.
The very first audio that came out of the radio was doody doody doo.
It's a sign.
I'm proud of that. Day.
And Marshall would have it no other way. I heard you guys. Hi, David. Hello there.
Hey, Wendy. Dean. How are you, buddy?
Hey, Dean.
Just hearing everybody reminiscing, and you know, people on social media are just reminiscing about the smiles that that Marshall Brodeen gave. And you know, sadly, he's passed away. But as anyone who has gone through Alzheimer's with anybody knows, that it's somewhat of a relief, because the person with the disease, of course, is suffering. But as Dave said, Mary Brodeen has, gone through what a lot of caregivers of people with Alzheimer's go through, and taking such amazing care of him for the last 15 years, both at home and then when he went to memory care after that. It's been very difficult for her.
Dean, I know that he was sick for quite a while. Was he able to contribute when you were putting Bozo, Gar, and Ray together? Was he able to help and contribute to that?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. We put that together, so long ago, 12 years ago, that he was able to. And many of the tapes, we've talked so many times about how there were so few tapes that were preserved by WGN. Right. Marshall had kept a pretty good collection of beta tapes of his performances. So, you know, we were able to get a lot of the footage from Marshall's personal collection. So he did. He helped us with that. He helped us with so many of the shows. He was, you know, in 2012 was inducted into the Chicago TV Academy's Silver Circle Hall of Fame, and we put together a nice tribute for him at that time. And I did like a 30-minute interview with him, one-on-one interview with him about his career and his time as Bozo. And he had already started showing signs of Alzheimer's then.
Yeah.
I don't know if he was officially diagnosed at that point. And, you know, during the interview, he would repeat some things that, you know, he told me. But his wife, Mary, was there as we were doing it and, you know, sort of helped him and coached him along. We're going to be replaying that interview, by the way, on my Sunday show this coming weekend.
Oh, perfect.
We'll be listening for that for sure.
People will be able to hear it, yeah.
Yep.
And you were talking about Bill was asking about his museum and his collection. I know you were there many times too. I mean, it was almost overwhelming when you walked downstairs and saw the history really from several times in his life.
Yeah, I mean, it was you know, artifacts, photographs of his amazing career from, you know, there are pictures of him as a teenager, you know, here in Chicago with an interest in magic, working little magic shows, working private parties, corporate events, county fairs, state fairs, you know, just Marshall, a very, very young Marshall, black and white pictures, levitating people, you know, doing his tricks. There was a photograph of him upside down, hanging from a chain. It looked like he must have been doing that Houdini
escape trick.
Yeah. Some amazing photos. I mean, you could spend hours and hours and hours down there looking at photos of him with celebrities, Muhammad Ali, Anthony Hopkins, which was interesting because one time I sat down to interview Anthony Hopkins, and I said, you know, it said, you know, Dean with WGN in Chicago. And he goes, oh, Marshall Brodeen Station. Anthony Hopkins.
Oh, that's awesome.
Whoa.
He was a fan of Marshall's magic and knew him. And, you know, they like, apparently socialized a couple of times. But, you know, you get a Hannibal Lecter to recognize a whistle.
Well, Dean, I almost wonder if he didn't draw from that a little bit when he played a magician in the movie Magic, you know?
It's very possible.
He may have. All right, guys, hold tight. We have to take a quick break and then more discussion about the great Marshall Brodeen. It's coming up in just a little bit. It's Bill Huff. It's Wendy Snyder, along with Dean Richards and Dave Plyer. We're reminiscing about the great Marshall Brodeen. Many of you knew him as Wizzo on Bozo Circus, but he was a fine magician in his own right. And Wendy, you have some breaking news, correct?
I do. There's another death in the news. It has been announced in various sources, TMZ. Airwolf star Jan Michael Vincent has died at the age of 74 after cardiac arrest. It appears he died last month. It's being announced today.
Oh, wow.
God, did I have a crush on him.
The world's greatest athlete. Remember that movie?
Yes, I do.
And Buster and Billy. A very disturbing movie, Buster and Billy.
Yes.
It's not been a good week for celebrity death.
No.
Dean, you mentioned this earlier, but it needs to be re-illustrated because it's so important. Marshall Brodeen had high praise from other magicians. Some magicians that went on to have careers that eclipsed his always gave him credit, didn't they?
Little guy called David Copperfield, for one, said that he got his start in magic with Marshall's TV magic cards.
That's where I got my start.
Yeah,
and finish.
TV magic cards are those magic sets that he used to sell.
Yeah.
You know, it's very interesting. A couple of years ago, when Marshall was being inducted into the TV Hall of Fame, the Silver Circle, his Alzheimer's had gotten pretty bad at that point. He was, you know, I was supposed to do his induction. I was supposed to read it. And then normally the person who gets the honor comes up and gives a speech. And, you know, so his family was concerned about him, you know, being up at the podium and not embarrassing himself, you know, losing his train of thought and so forth. So you know, Marshall and I were talking ahead of time, and, you know, I was trying to get a sense of, you know, what he was going to talk about so I would know how to kind of lead him in conversation and to get through this acceptance speech that he had to give. And we did the presentation. He, you know, gave a few comments, you know, thanking everybody and the Academy and WGN and his family and so forth. And I had asked him prior if he remembered the TV Magic commercial, the words that he used in the TV Magic commercial. And this is very typical of somebody with Alzheimer's, is that their short-term memory is bad, but their long-term memory is very good. And without flinching, he was able to recite, "Hi, I'm Marshall Brodeen, a magician.
A professional magician."
Professional magician.
Yes.
Professional, you're right. He was able to, he went through it and brought the house down with his acceptance speech, that he was able to, you know, so flawlessly get through that during his acceptance speech. But it was those TV magic cards. It was those magic sets, you know, that built him a beautiful house in Geneva and provided, you know, millions and millions of those were sold. And Lance Burton, as I'd mentioned, David Copperfield, huge names in magic, all said that, you know, they got their start
thanks to him,
because of Marshall's cards, right?
We are so out of time, guys. I'm sorry. And Gary has called in and wanted to talk about this magic tavern off North Avenue that Marshall Brodeen owned, but we have got to run. Thank you, Gary.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. Dean Richards, of course, and Dave Plyer. And there are pictures of his collection online. You kind of have to Google it and find it. But what an amazing collection he's got.
Yeah, guys, we have on the tribute piece that I put together, we have pictures of his basement. We have pictures of the collection, some great photos from his archives, all at WGNTV.com. And Sunday I'll have that interview that I did with him a couple of years ago that if you're a fan, you're definitely going to want to listen.
We'll be listening.
Thank you. And David Plyer, thank you for being on with us as well. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Have a good show. Take care. Duty to you.
Thank you. I don't know who came up with it. I don't know how they came up with it, but, you know, we'll all remember it forever. So
it has two meanings, though.
I think it does.
Number two. All right. Thank you.
And his name was Wizzo. Yeah. I mean, it's all very ironic, isn't it? All right. A break and then a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And off the air, Steve, I invited you to participate in this next interview.
And here's what we heard.
It's International Women's Day.
Okay,
yes.
But I don't think of that as being any other day. Seriously.
Really?
Because you're an international woman.
That's right.
If you weren't, you'd be on edge.
Yes.
Yeah, but I didn't even make the correlation here, and I just feel bad that a guy has to say, oh, I don't want to get involved because it's International Women's Day. That's the problem these days. Remember that Gillette commercial that came out? I don't really remember it, which means I didn't have a problem with it, but Steve, you were kind of against that Gillette commercial.
I'm trying to remember, Wendy. I don't know that
it was depicting boys.
Oh, yeah, because I thought it was
you said it put boys in a bad light, I remember.
Well, what I think I said was I liked the message, but it was scripted. It was oversimplified.
Oh,
yeah.
All right, well, I found this article. One of my favorite websites is grownandflown.com. If you're a parent, check it out. There are just many things on there. And one of the articles that was written by Nicole Merritt, who joins us right now, really kind of touched me. And first of all, I'd like to say hello to Nicole. How's it going?
Hi, Wendy. How are you? I'm doing well. Thank you.
We're good. I didn't mean this to interrupt International Women's Day.
Happy International Women's Day, by the way, Nicole.
Yes, thank you. Yes, I put that together yesterday. I was like, oh, great, what a topic.
Yeah. All right, so part of the article that you wrote is about, like, you go on social media and posts and articles that are all over the internet is about raising daughters, and you have daughters. You have two daughters, correct?
I do, a seven-year-old and a three-year-old.
And it's most of these articles are about why we need to raise our boys with particular values for the sake of the females and the daughters in the world. But in a way, our boys are being neglected. Boys should just be able to be just like our girls. And you have a boy as well. And this kind of touched you a little bit, didn't it?
I do, and yes, and he is 5 years old. Yeah, many, many of the articles that I see that always are coming across my newsfeed are all about raising strong, confident, opinionated, willing to speak up women. I myself have written about, you know, raising my daughter to have a smart mouth in a good way, and I talk about smart mouth rules in that article. But I also want to make sure that we are raising our sons with those same values. Like, it's not boys versus girls, men versus women. Like, we just need to be a society of good people. And I remember sitting in the car, looking in the back, and I've got my chatty 7-year-old and my very chatty, bossy, you know, 2-year-old toddler, both females. And I look back and I see my son, who's just kind of sitting there taking it all in. You know, everybody else is chatting around him. And that's when I thought, man, are we forgetting about our boys? Am I forgetting about my boy? Like, I got to make sure that he's got a voice and that he knows that he has it and he can use it for good.
I have 2 teenage boys, and we've talked a lot about this Me Too movement, and they have expressed some fear sometimes, like, you know, do I have to, you know, treat women differently? And I said, you should be able to treat women just like another person. And if you're a decent right. human being, you don't have to worry about the Me Too part.
Right. And I mean, that's the same. And that's what I think I put it in that piece. Like, I'm all for, you know, men being good to women, but I'm for women being good to men. I'm just for people being good to people. And that kind of gets lost in the whole thing. It's very us versus them right now. And that's the part I didn't like. I think that boys, some people think boys are innately, you know, self-confident and self-assured. And they're not. They need the same coaching, value teaching, love, affection, and understanding as their girl counterparts.
Would totally agree.
Do you think, though, Nicole, that this might be a byproduct of maybe we just needed some catch-up time, that for generations and generations, men were the focus of almost everything and women kind of needed more time to create that equality? Do you think that could be a byproduct or not?
Yes, no, and I totally agree with you. And there's plenty of people that, you know, have, because this article has been kind of around places, that have said, listen, we're finally getting a voice. Now you're complaining that we're talking too much about women and for women. But the thing is, you know, maybe men in general, like the older men that are adults now, yes, they have had the voice. But these young people, like my son, who I'm bringing up, who's 5 years old, he's yet to have one. So that's not, I don't think it's fair to group, you know, all apples as bad apples.
And I think we're looking at our children to teach them to not let what happened with these older gentlemen, the whole Me Too movement, were these guys that have been doing these terrible things for many, many years. I feel in my heart that this generation of kids, they treat each other as equals. They don't see color. They don't have issues like we older people do. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I can't remember how long ago I wrote it, but I wrote another article called, like, that today's youth is restoring my faith in humanity. Like, I learn so much on a daily basis from my children, more than the adults that are around me. I mean, they are teaching me lessons every single day. And if we all just kind of, you know, put down our phones and stay more present, we'd be picking up a lot of good things.
I have always been a bit of a tomboy, so my mom kind of let me be. I was always rough and tumble and played with the boys more than the girls, and I have always been a pretty strong woman, but I want my boys to be strong men as well, and you can be strong without being a jerk.
Right. Completely agree with you. And I was lucky. I was raised in a household where, you know, I knew that I could and be and do anything that I ever could want. But so could my brother and so could my older sister. Like, we were all on the same playing field. Not everybody gets that. And that's a shame.
Our guest is Nicole Merritt, a freelance writer, the co-host of I Am the Worst Parent Ever, a great podcast. We'll pick this up in just a little bit. Stick around. It's Bill and it's Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. It's International Women's Day, and we are talking about empowering women and that it's important for women to have a voice, but it's also important for boys to have a voice as well. Nicole Merritt is on the line with us, owner and founder of J3Me, You can go to j3andme.com, a great website. We were talking about strong women, and we're teaching our girls to do these things, but what do we teach our boys in this day and age? And we got an interesting text that I would like to share I disagree. I think men are much more feminine these days. Bill and I were discussing this off the air. I don't know if that's the correct term, maybe more sensitive, but I love that.
Maybe they're just more human, like the rest of us, and happy and content with being authentically themselves, whatever that looks like. And I think that's the problem. We, for so long, we haven't, and maybe some people still don't accept other people for just whoever they are, whatever that looks like. And we need to do more of that.
Nicole, my parents were extremely progressive about teaching my brother and myself about equality between men and women. But that said, I was also taught to hold a door open for a woman to pay for at least a first date. And then beyond that, that it was always ladies first. Does any of that still hold up, or is that all gone?
I mean, I think it holds up, but I also hold the door for my husband. You know, if I go in first, if I get to the door first, I hold it for him. So I think it's a mutual respect thing, not a man-woman thing. Just, I'm ahead of you, I'm going to do that, or I'm going to say thank you because that's good manners.
Chivalry is not dead. It's just different now, because if I wasn't married and I was going on a first date, I wouldn't want the guy to pay for me.
You wouldn't.
I would want to split it because I feel like, hey, we're both going into this wondering what's going to happen. Why should you pay for me?
Right. Yeah.
And then I'd feel like I owed him something.
The thing I don't like, I'm bothered by the fact we pay so much attention to, and rightly, to the impressions that young girls are given growing up, and we talk about the social pressures on them, and they're, you know, they need to feel the need to conform and all that. But we just don't give the same attention to boys when it comes to the messages they're giving, or that their behavior is the pressure they might have to, you know, make out with girls or to do different things, you know, because they are our society. It's not one of us or all of us. It's just the society puts this thing on these boys too, and I just don't think we give enough attention to that when they get in trouble later.
Right, and I think it starts in your home with your parenting and your values and what you're teaching your children and what you're allowing them to view or read. You can't control everything, no, but if you raise your child and you're paying enough attention, like actual attention, and listening when they're talking and having those hard conversations, then I think when they view that stuff or hear that stuff, they'll bring into it their own kind of internal instinct that you've helped them develop and make the right choices.
There have been a lot of biases against boys in school. There have been many articles written, including Time Magazine did a big feature years ago about if a boy is kind of loud and outspoken in class, they get sent to the principal's office. But if a girl is being like that, it's encouraged. Oh, look, the girls are having a conversation. I know, because I was a bit of a big mouth in school, and I never got sent to the office, but yet there'd be boys that did stuff, and it's like, you're disrupting the classroom, go down. That's not fair.
No, I agree with you. I've yet to see that. I love the schools where my children are. I don't see any of that. Everything is kind of equal down the line, so I'm pretty lucky about that.
I'm sure you've seen these stories. They happen once or twice a year, Nicole, where a girl in school is told she can't wear what she's wearing because it's too provocative. What will boys think when they see you dressed that way? So who do we have that talk with? The girls for dressing that way? The boys for potentially thinking poorly of her? Or both sexes?
I mean, I think you definitely have conversations with your daughters at home about you need to dress in a way that is comfortable to you, makes you feel good about yourself, makes you happy, right? But you want to make sure you're not sending the wrong message. So let's talk about what messages our clothes and our appearance send. Mm-hmm. You also have the conversation that it really stinks that our appearance sends a message at all, you know, that people might not get past that. But you have to have that larger conversation, and you're going to have to bring in all these kind of hard, challenging questions and things that are going to kind of contradict one another. But I think it starts with having those conversations in your home, and sure, have your son sit there as well and hear it from the other side.
Times are changing. We have different relationships with our kids now than I did with my mom. I mean, we never talked about sex or anything. Now, if you don't talk to your children about things that are out there, they're going to find out their own way through social media. And also, a lot of kids who have boys and girls, sometimes the girl is the athlete and not the boy, and that's okay.
Right, exactly. Yeah, no, I mean, we encourage, you know, I have my son's doing T-ball now. My daughter dances competitively, and my little one, she's just kind of, you know, doing all these little things around. But we give them opportunities to try whatever it is they want to try. They have to give it a good old try, you know, not just one day. You give it a good try and see if you like it, and you find what you like and what you don't, and we support their passions either way. They don't want to stick to something. You want to go to art, you do that. But you have to be willing to ebb and flow with your child's passions. It's going to change. I mean, they're so young.
I know we don't have a lot of time to call. I'm just curious, when you write an article like this where you say we're forgetting about our boys and that's not okay, you get a lot of pushback? You get a lot of people that want to debate you on that?
Yes. Yeah, I've had a few where I know once I hit publish, I'm like, oh, no, this is going to be pretty controversial. And then the messages will start pouring into to my feed, and I just try to sideline it, and I put out there, you know, my truth, which I never hone as the be all end all, but just, you know, how I feel, and hopefully most people find it inspiring or encouraging, or can relate to it in some way.
The key is, though, is that you're making people think, and that if you're writing, that's kind of what you want to do, so you're succeeding on that level, aren't you?
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Sure.
And we are running the gamut here with our text line right now. This is interesting. Well said. Great people as people. Great people are great people and do not differentiate between genders or colors. A few years ago, I took my then 3-year-old grandson to the American Girl Cafe with his American Girl doll, and he was completely ignored because he was a boy. And that's interesting. And then you get the other text that says, tell Nicole to get in the kitchen and make me lunch.
Oh.
So.
Wow. Wow.
It runs the gamut, I'll tell you that.
Happy International Women's Day, Nicole.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
I hope they were just kidding, and I'm sure they were. Nicole, I really like your website. It's J3, the letter N, me. So J3andMe.com. Nicole Merritt, freelance writer. You have been all over the Today Show. You have I Am the Worst Parent Ever podcast, and you're doing a great job. And as Bill said, you are making us think. And I think our kids are thinking on their own now. I think they are our future, and I'm very hopeful.
Me as well. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Nicole. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll get you some news. And then Alexander Zalbin will be joining us from The Decider. That's coming up next.
And the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
Thanks, Steve. It's Bill Effen. It's Wendy Snyder. If you want to chime in at any point during the show, you can call us or text us at 312-981-7200. Alexander Zalbin joins us every Friday. He's the managing editor of Decider.com, a wonderful website if you like TV news, entertainment news. Alexander, how are you? Everything good?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We're good. Wendy and I talked about this at great length yesterday, but it certainly bears some repeating. An amazing interview on the CBS Morning Show with Gayle King, as she had R. Kelly sit down for part of it. He didn't remain seated through the whole interview. No. Your chance to see it again, if you didn't see any of it on the CBS Morning News, it's going to be not rerun, but the entire interview will be shown tonight. I think it's 7 o'clock Central. Does that sound right?
It's 7 o'clock Central, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on CBS. And as far as I have seen, they actually recorded an 80-minute long interview with R. Kelly. They aired 8 minutes of it on CBS in the morning, which, as you mentioned, were utterly horrifying and riveting and must-watch TV. This is the extended version. You can check out the whole thing. If you did miss it or didn't see the clips online, certainly there's going to be a lot more to unpack after that airs tonight.
I have to say, and we talked about this yesterday a little bit, but I don't know how you could do a better job with something like that than Gayle King did. Mm-hmm. It was a very, very tense interview, the parts that we saw, and she was so calm.
Oh, I don't know how.
Yeah, what happened there?
Yeah, I mean, when you're doing an interview like that, I feel like there's almost a script to these things now, that it almost comes off as an apology tour. And my take on it is that's kind of what R. Kelly seemed to expect coming in. But that's not what Gayle King was laying down, and that's not what she was having. She acted like a journalist, which shouldn't be a surprise, but she did an incredible job with that and stayed even through that. When those pictures first popped up in my timeline of him jumping in the air and screaming and her just stoically and calmly sitting there and moving past it, I thought it was fake. I honestly did. So
it did look like that. And,
yeah.
Yeah. Amazing job.
She was able to somehow just, she would just say, you know, as he got more and more heated, she would just sit there and she'd say, Robert, Robert. And Wendy does that to me during the show. I never knew what it meant until this week.
Yeah, I mean, you guys know as interviewers, I don't know if you ever dealt with a situation like that, and hopefully you haven't, but certainly there are times when things go a little off the rails.
Yeah.
It's hard to stay calm or figure out what to do, but she came in prepared. She knew what she needed to do. She knew this was not going to be an easy interview, and she pushed on through it and got what she needed to get.
I'm surprised she wasn't more scared, because he came completely unhinged, where I don't know if he was going to start swinging or what. Well, he just really lost it.
She explained last night, she was on Stephen Colbert's show, and she said she wasn't afraid for herself. What she was afraid of was is that he was going to just end the interview, and she didn't want that to happen. She wanted the interview to continue. And if you go back and watch, because I did, I went back and watched part of it, you go, yeah, that's how she was playing it. Very wise move. Now, she also, Alex, she talked to two of his, I guess you'd say girlfriends. It's two of the girls who live with him there in the house. They're very young. I think they're 21 and 23. Do you know, will that part of the interview be shown tonight? Do you know that?
I saw a little of that.
Quite sure if that's in it, though. I'd expect they'll touch on that a little bit, or maybe repeat some portions or give some sort of context on the special. We honestly don't know exactly what's going to be airing tonight. But, yeah, as you mentioned, that's its whole own complicated can of worms, because those are essentially two women that I think you have to say he bought, basically. And they went on TV to defend him and said that their parents were trying to get money and extort him. But there have been dozens of women who have come out against him. So not to dismiss at all what these two women said, but there's certainly a lot more to the story than just them and him.
You know, you could certainly draw a parallel to what's going on with R. Kelly and the documentary about him and the one that we all saw on HBO about Michael Jackson. I don't know if you saw this, Alex, but yesterday, Corey Feldman, who for years and years and years has defended Michael Jackson and said, there was never anything inappropriate between Michael Jackson and myself. I was a friend of his when I was younger, but nothing strange ever happened. He actually came out yesterday and said, while never admitting that anything happened between Michael and him, that it's impossible for him to defend Michael Jackson after seeing this documentary. He can't do it anymore. Is that a surprise or not a surprise?
It's only a surprise that he reversed himself so quickly, frankly, but I think he really just needed to see that documentary and really think about it. This is something that I think the three of us have talked about before, but my feeling on it is when you know somebody personally, you interact with them in a very specific way, and that's how you know them. And frankly, based on what Corey Feldman is saying, yes, he never experienced that behavior. He never saw any sort of behavior. So he only knew Michael Jackson as a friend, so that's how he believed he was. So to be faced with any sort of allegations from anybody, it conflicts with that worldview. But you watch Leaving Neverland, you see how those men talk about what happened in the past, and you see how it's explained in the documentary, and it's very hard to believe that they are not telling the truth, because really, they don't have anything to gain by coming out and talking about it now.
Yep. On a lighter note, a much, much lighter note, Ricky Gervais is finally coming back to TV. What can you tell us?
Well, you'd think it would be a lighter note, except for the fact that it is a new series on Netflix that dropped today. It's 6 episodes, and it's a surprisingly serious series from Ricky Gervais, who people probably know from The Office and Extras and hosting the Golden Globes and others. The idea of the series, it's dark comedy. His wife suddenly dies, and he decides to punish the world by saying exactly what he thinks. What you'll find is it's actually more dramatic than you think. It's not necessarily being as raw and in-your-face as he usually is on Twitter, or when he's hosting the Golden Globes or anything like that. It's maybe a little more poignant. It's probably not his best series. You know, go back, watch The Office, watch Extras for that. But if you're a fan of him, maybe it's something you might want to check out.
One of the things I like most about him is that he approaches things always from a tilted direction. It's never anything straight on. His approach is always a strange way in, and I always like that. I think he's very creative that way.
Yeah, I think what you'll find with this one is it's definitely more dramatic than comedic, which is something that I don't think people will be expecting. So certainly it might be one worth checking out.
I want to put a shout out there to AP Bio. I don't know if you're a fan, Alexander, but Glenn Howerton, who played Dennis from Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Patton Oswalt's on it. It's funny. It premiered. I enjoy it still.
Yeah, one of our writers, Josh Sarkatch, is a huge fan of the show. I checked out the first episodes, by the way, and I really enjoyed it, but it's one I haven't kept up with. But he is a big fan of the show. He writes about it on the site all the time, put up a couple of reasons you should check out the new season yesterday. And according to him, even though it's the second season, it's the sort of thing you can jump right in and enjoy. And it has, as you mentioned, Glenn Howerton from It's Always Sunny, but also the young cast is wonderful and delightful and hilarious as well. So definitely one worth checking out.
You know how, like, when you watched School of Rock, the kids were so good in that particular movie, and you commented on that. These kids, I don't even know if they're truly kids, but the actors that play his students are just, they make the show to me. It's really not, he's not the best part of it. The kids are, it's amazing. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, if you are interested in checking out the show, the fun riff of it is that usually you have that sort of teacher who comes in and has to motivate the kids. It's the opposite with the show, where he doesn't want to teach, and the kids just want him to teach one lesson. That's it. They just want a little bit of learning out of their classes. So it's really fun.
He says, right as he comes in, he's like, I am not going to teach you anything in this biology class, and you'll all get an A. Unless you say something to somebody, then you're getting an F.
Oh, wow.
It's good great. Rules.
Alexander Zelbin's our guest. He's the managing editor of Decider.com. We'll take a quick break and then come back with more, so stick around for that. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder, along with our guest, Alexander Zelbin. He is the managing editor of Decider.com. Over on HBO, it's The Case Against Adnan and Syed. What can you tell us about this, Alex?
Sure. If you are a fan of the podcast Serial, you're definitely going to want to check this out. It's a four-part true crime series. It airs one episode each week, as you mentioned, HBO at 9 p.m. And it digs deeper into Adnan Syed and his case, as the title implies. I will say a couple of our reviewers here at Decider checked it out. They think it's very good, very solid, a nice companion to Serial. But the big one you're going to want to look forward to is the fourth and final episode, which is going to contain some new evidence that may change how you think about the whole case.
Oh, all right.
I'm sorry, but what is Serial? I've heard of it, but I don't know exactly what it is. Can you explain that?
I'm one of the few people in the world that actually didn't watch Serial, though certainly we've covered it a lot. But it was a podcast that delved into the case of this guy, Adnan Syed. It's definitely pointed to as kicking off the current true crime trend.
Was it an audio podcast or just a video?
It was an audio podcast,
okay, so no video to it.
Yeah, but this one, all video. So yes. There you go. You can watch stuff instead of just listening.
Bob Saget coming back to television.
Really?
I
love him.
And with an interesting twist on his old America's Funniest Home Videos. What do you know about this one?
Yeah, this is premiering Tuesday, March 12th at 10 p.m. on ABC, and it's called Videos After Dark. And it's basically America's Funniest Home Videos, hosted by Bob Saget, but more mature and a little less family-friendly. And before you think, whoa, Bob Saget is doing that, that's actually how he started. He started as a very raunchy, very in-your-face stand-up comic. So I initially balked at the idea, but then when I thought about it for another couple of seconds, I thought, oh, that's actually his wheelhouse. That's where he's comfortable. So it might be a fun and very weird thing to check out.
It's so funny because he was on Full House and America's Funniest Home Videos, people kind of thought, well, that's what Bob Saget is. He's squeaky clean. And then they'd go and see him in clubs, and he was the exact opposite of that. This might be the perfect thing for him, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I should mention this week's episode is a special sneak preview, and then it'll pick up with a regular series at some point later in the year. But yeah, like you said, it's going to be definitely not for kids. Don't gather the whole family around, but it should be a lot of fun.
They keep showing ads for season two. I know it premieres Sunday, season two of American Gods. Usually when you see a preview of something, you can kind of figure out what the storyline is. I have no idea what's going on there. Explain.
Sure. So this premieres the second season at 8 p.m. on Stars on Sunday. It's based on a book by Neil Gaiman. And the idea is that gods exist. All of the gods, every pantheon, they live in America, and a guy named Shadow Moon, who's played by Ricky Whittle, if you ever watched The 100, he played Lincoln on that, he gets caught in a war between the old gods and the new. But it's very dreamy. It really delves into religion, what it means to people, but in a very fun and trippy way. Neil Gaiman, anybody who knows his writing, he's really into myths. And he's really into exploring mythology, and that's what the show does. It's crazy, boldly visual. I really love the first season. The thing that made people very worried going to the second season is most of the behind-the-scenes people left. Brian Fuller and Michael Green, who created it, left the show. Kristen Chenoweth, who is on the first season, left. Gillian Anderson left. So there are a lot of questions going into the second season. But I will say, if you like the show in the first season, at least for the first couple of episodes, you'll still be on board with season two.
And that's shown on Stars. All right, now a couple of quick questions about stories that have happened this week. Number one, the sad, untimely death of Luke Perry. Luke Perry mm-hmm. played Archie's father on Riverdale. Do we know how they're going to handle this yet?
Well, we know in the short term how they're going to handle it. They put an in-memoriam card up at the end of this week's episode. There is honestly a lot of questions in my mind whether they're going to air it, because anybody who watches Riverdale knows it can be very extreme. There's a lot of murder and sexuality and other things. But this was a relatively calm episode for the show. There was a very sweet scene where Luke Perry, as Fred Andrews, is relating to his son Archie Andrews and helping him out. And so they made the decision to air this. They said that this episode that aired this week and every episode from now on will be dedicated to Luke Perry. But in terms of the season itself, there's still a couple of episodes that they have left to film. It does look like Molly Ringwald, who plays Mary Andrews, Archie's mom, is coming back for some final episodes. So my suspicion, this is not based on any actual facts, but my suspicion is they probably did some hasty rewrites to make things work for the end of the season, are bringing in Molly Ringwald to at least make the plot elements work. But going forward, it's a huge loss for the show and for the world at large.
You know, I'm sure if you're the producer of a show like that and he's the star, the first thought is, well, if he obviously can't play the character anymore, so your option is either recast the role or somehow kill the character off. But that would seem mm-hmm. insensitive since he died so awfully and subtly, you know, and quickly. And I don't know how you pull that off.
Well, I think on the recasting thing, that's not anything that would happen with Riverdale. There's always options. You know, you look at a show like Spartacus, where the star rather shockingly died, and they did actually recast him.
Yeah.
That worked okay for that show, because that's how that show was built. Here on Riverdale, and I think anybody who knows who watches the show, Fred Andrews was Luke Perry. Like, they basically tweaked the character to make him work as Luke Perry. Luke Perry was a father figure to the entire cast. So it's not somebody you can just replace. In terms of killing off the character, that's potentially a route they can go. I think, in fact, that's probably the thing that they will do, that they'll have some sort of shocking real-world thing that will affect the cast. And, you know, for better or for worse, that has worked in certain ways. I mean, I think about the News Radio episode after Phil Hartman yeah. suddenly died,
yep.
which was... I still can't watch that episode because it's so gut-wrenching and so sad, but that's how they dealt with it, and again, that made sense for the show. So Riverdale's a toughie. It's an off-the-wall show, even on a regular basis. There's crazy stick monsters and things going on, so it'll be interesting to see how they deal with a shocking, awful, real-world thing on a show like that, but they're good writers, and it's good showrunner, and I really trust them to take care of it.
Another death, Jan Michael Vincent has passed away at the age of 74, and he actually died back on February 10th after suffering cardiac arrest while he was a patient at a North Carolina hospital, according to sources. He, of course, was known, what was his series?
Airwolf.
But Bill, I have to tell you, because I am determined to make this happen, he was also on the Banana Splits Adventure Hour.
Yeah, he was Chungo, I think.
Lincoln Link Simmons.
Oh, right. The show, the segment was Chungo. He was the guy who went out in search of Chungo.
All right, well, I have to bring up the Banana Splits every week, Alex. That's my goal.
Yeah.
But that's sad. 74 years old. I had such a crush on him.
Yeah, he's a handsome guy.
He was pretty handsome.
We also learned that Alex Trebek, the host of Jeopardy, is battling pancreatic cancer. Will he continue to host? I'm not sure that he could do that. Could he during his treatments?
Yeah, he is. I mean, we all know he's an amazing guy, but he is planning on hosting through chemo. There has never been a guest host on Jeopardy since he took over the show back in the 80s, even though he had, I believe, two cardiac arrests and a blood clot over the course of the past couple of decades. They've never brought in anybody else. So he is planning on fighting the cancer. He's planning on getting chemo, but he's also planning on hosting the show. And as of right now, he has another 3 years left on his contract. So he's planning on sticking through that. I guess we'll see what happens.
If you ever watch New Amsterdam, which is one of my new favorite shows, the medical director is going through chemotherapy and refuses to relinquish his position, so he's still working every day, too. Mm. I know that's not real life, but close enough.
Yeah, yeah. We finally got word that Mad About You, which they've been talking about this for about a year, a little over a year now, it has finally found a home. This is the Paul Reiser Helen Hunt series from years and years ago. What can you tell us about this?
Yeah, so this is an interesting one just in terms of where it ended up. The original cast is coming back. Paul Reiser and Helen Hunt, the creator behind the scenes, is coming back. But it's something they had been shopping around for a while to NBC, broadcast stations, streaming networks. It seems like nobody picked it up until Spectrum Originals picked it up. Now, most people probably don't know what Spectrum Originals is because it hasn't actually launched, but it's from Charter Spectrum. They actually also picked up the scrapped Switch Gendered Bad Boys pilot that's coming out at some point soon. So they're going to be launching with that, the Mad About You revival, and presumably if you have, like actually I do here in New York, Charter Spectrum as your cable provider, that should come to you as streaming on that. But right now we don't know a lot about that streaming service or exactly what it's going to drop, but certainly Mad About You fans should be pretty excited.
I'm surprised NBC took a pass on it. They've done really well with Will and Grace, and of course Roseanne show has lived on and done a nice job for ABC. I'm very surprised NBC jumped ship on it.
I think with the revival trend, we've hit a little bit of a plateau at this point. Certainly there was, as you mentioned, huge interest when Will and Grace came back, huge interest when Roseanne came back. But it's not even necessarily that we're hitting diminishing returns just so much as they're doing fine.
Yeah.
You know, so bringing back Mad About You on NBC is not as sure of that this year as it potentially would have been last year.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I agree with you, Alex. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you a week from today.
All right, sounds great. Thanks so much.
Alexander Zeldman, the managing editor of Decider.com. We'll take a little break. We'll get you some news and then more show. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and it's WGN.
Oh, there is no break. What? We were told that, yeah.
Oh, because it's International Women's Day. I always forget. I always forget the rules. The rules are crazy on International Women's Day. David, thanks very much. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Our guest in studio, Danielle Clayman-Gelber, an established television producer and network executive, here to talk about the Jewish Film Festival and about her career. Happy International Women's Day to you, Danielle.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here. I brought my daughter in for the occasion.
Noticed that. Excellent.
Now, you are not from here, correct? You're
no,
not from
I'm not.
Chicago, but you were invited here.
I've been invited here by the Chicago Jewish Film Festival. JCC Chicago is hosting the whole event, and it's been a pretty phenomenal experience so far.
It's a tremendous film festival. I've been lucky enough to see films there the last several years. You don't have a film in it, but a relative does. Your brother-in-law, does he have a film in it?
Yeah, my brother-in-law directed a documentary called Carl Laemmle, the founder of Universal Pictures, who also, more heroically than that, saved over 300 families from the Holocaust. And it's a really moving and fascinating story.
That's excellent. When will that be shown at the film festival?
They're showing it tomorrow night. I think it's helping to wrap up the whole festival.
Nice.
This is
the 6th annual JCC Chicago Jewish Film Festival. It runs through March 17th through St. Patrick's Day. Mm-hmm. 43 different films at venues across the city and suburbs. 43 different ones.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's been sort of a critical mass of all kinds of documentaries and original pictures. And I think it's grown exponentially over the past few years. So it's an exciting time to be in the city.
When did you decide, Danielle, that you wanted to make this your life work, that Hollywood and show business and all the glitz and glamour that comes along with it is right for you?
Well, you know, I almost fell into it. I grew up in Los Angeles, and when I decided that I wanted to, you know, go into the business, I figured it's a company town, join the company.
Yeah.
And I was fortunate enough to start off as Aaron Spelling's assistant.
Oh. Which not a bad place to start.
Cool, yeah. And he was a great mentor to me. I worked with him for 7 or 8 years, and together we did Beverly Hills 90210 and Melrose Place for Fox. And then
so sorry about Luke Perry.
Oh,
such tragic news.
It really is. He was one in a million.
Yeah.
We're all very devastated by it.
Aaron Spelling wasn't just a producer. He was almost a super producer. He had his hand in so many projects, so many important shows, everything from The Love Boat to Charlie's Angels to Beverly Hills 90210. The list goes on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
What was it like working with him on a regular basis?
It was amazing because he was larger than life and completely real and so down to earth. He was a poor Jewish boy from Texas, and he made it all on his own. He's the true American dream,
yeah,
kind of thing. He was an incredible guy. When I first got there, he was exclusive to ABC. He had 7 series on the air there. They used to call it Aaron's Broadcasting Network. He was a really cool guy.
It's a shame he couldn't parlay that into a nice house. He lived in a little shack. It was almost embarrassing to even see it.
We felt bad for Aaron.
So from there, from working as an assistant with Aaron Spelling, what was your next play?
Well, by the end of my time there, I was running his development. And then when we did 90210 and Melrose, we had discovered Darren Star, who created those shows for us.
Yeah.
And then we were airing them on Fox, and the Fox network called me and asked me to come over and be a buyer. So that began my career as a network executive.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Is it what you thought it would be? I mean, we all have kind of preconceived notions of what this sort of business is. Did it match it? Was it better? Not quite as good?
It's always been fascinating and terrific. I've always felt very lucky to be in this business because it's constantly interesting and you meet amazing people. When I got to Fox, it was interesting because they were adding nights. It was a really nascent little weblet at the time, sort of derided by everybody as the fourth network and what the hell is this?
Mm-hmm.
And we proved that it was something to be reckoned with. The first show I developed for them was The X-Files.
Mm. Oh, that was one of my favorite shows. Mm-hmm. I have the comic books. That's how much I was into The X-Files.
Oh my God, you were deep diving.
I really was.
And then I did Ally McBeal and Party of Five and on and on. And it was a great experience there. Good run.
How does Fox keep its news? Its news division, I think we all would have to agree, has a very certain agenda. But its regular entertainment division is all over the place. The scope is much broader. How do they coexist?
Well, I think that they're very separate entities and streams. Rupert Murdoch is really good at siloing off all of his different holdings. So Fox Television is what it wants to be, and it has nothing to do with the tonality of what Fox News wants to mm-hmm. be. They're very separate.
I love that The Simpsons, from time to time, will take jabs at the news division.
Yeah,
normally a network would go, hey, lay low on that, would you, please? But they don't. They let them run with it.
That's the only show that could get away with that,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
So on this International Women's Day, are there a lot of women network executives?
There really are. It's starting to become much more of a proliferation. When I was... and to this day, the only original executive producer of all the Chicago shows, Chicago Fire, Med, and PD. But as network executives and heads of networks and things like that, there are a lot more women now than
thankfully.
There used to be.
So it's a pretty good get for the JCC Chicago Jewish Film Festival to get you for them.
Well, I appreciate that. I feel very lucky to have been asked. And that's an incredible organization. They've been here for over 100 years, just inculcating immigrant families into this incredible incredible city and giving them so much opportunity. And then, by the way, they do this adjunctory thing where they bring this cultural film festival to the city that sort of expands the whole profile of the organization. It's great.
Yeah, it is great. Let's go back in time for a little bit as you were ascending, as your career was getting bigger and better. I remember there being a time where in the movie business, there was only one woman high-ranking executive. It was Sherry Lansing, and that was the entire list.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we've honestly, in 30, 35 years, tremendous progress.
A huge progress, and more so in television, I think, than in feature films. But and that's more my bailiwick anyway, so I would speak to that more effectively. Yeah. But yeah, television is very about women. There's a lot of female-centric programming, and I've just developed shows that have really iconic female characters in them. Mm-hmm. That's important, too. Mm-hmm. So
I loved Ally McBeal. I'm just thinking back of all those great shows.
So good. Is Shonda Rhimes the queen of the heap right now? Is there anyone
She's
more?
She's pretty much there.
She
yeah,
is, isn't
she is really something else.
Yeah. Are women running it differently than men used to run it? Are they being more fair and open-minded than men used to be in the past?
You know, I don't know if it's so much that. It's just there's a broader sensibility you bring to it. A lot of women, a lot of these women are mothers, and they're working mothers, and so there's the sensitivity to parenting and family that also comes into it. And I don't know, that's just a very humanistic approach that you can take.
Yeah, yeah.
Women can have it all, I'll tell you. They really can. It's hard to juggle it sometimes, but you can have a great career and
if
be
you
a decent mother.
Yeah, why not? Gee, I always wonder, are you insulted? Like, because people, I'm sure, have asked you over the years, how do you do it? How do you balance a career and a family? You'd never ask a guy that question, but women get that question on a daily basis.
Because the guys don't have the responsibilities at home.
That's it.
They really don't. Not
that's
like
it.
The women do.
Or in your heart, you know, you just carry that child with you, you know, all day long while you're doing everything you're doing at work. No, I was never insulted by it. I just, it becomes part of your world. It's just, this is how I do my life.
Yeah.
You're straddling both worlds always at the same time.
So true.
And thankfully, you have a job to go to get away from the kids, too. That's all I have to say.
Thank the Lord.
I know.
The running the shows is probably the easiest part of the day after working
exactly.
at the house.
I'm just sitting here having coffee.
Yeah, it's much easier. Danielle Clayman Gelber is here, established television producer, network executive. We're talking about her career and about the JCC, the Chicago Jewish Film Festival, running now through the 17th. We'll get more information to you next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder. Oh, here's some music to prove it. Yep, it's us.
Woo!
Danielle Clayman Gelber is here, television producer, network executive. She's been talking about her career and about the JCC, Chicago Jewish Film Festival, running right now through the 17th.
Can I just give the website?
Because
there are some great films that we'll be talking about. Just go to jccfilmfest.org and the schedule's up there.
We have some fan. They used to be called Fanboy, but it's International Women's Day. So let's say fan person questions that we want to ask. Wendy, go ahead.
Well, I mentioned, I saw on your bio that you had done some work with The Sopranos. I asked you what. Bill's eyes lit up. Mm-hmm. So tell us about your work with The Sopranos.
Sure. Well, David Chase, who is the genius one of
I don't know
mind.
Who that is.
Right? We've never heard of him. So he created it, and he was somebody with whom I made a development deal when I was at the Fox Network, and he came in and he pitched me this show mm-hmm. that was literally what The Sopranos became. And we developed the pilot episode with the ducks around the pool and the therapy sessions and the whole bit. And it was just so fresh and different. But at the time, if you put it contextually into the time that we were doing it in the mid-90s, the Fox Network was all about youth ensemble dramas and soapy, you know, young shows. And so we ultimately passed on it. And we did that a favor. We did the whole viewing audience a favor because ultimately it landed on HBO, which was where it should have, and it became, you know, the sort of sine qua non of television after that.
It could fully blossom on HBO, you know?
Oh, yeah. Is it true? I've always heard that when it was at Fox, they were looking at other actors that they didn't think James Gandolfini could close and be Tony Soprano, like Nipsey Russell could ever do a better job. Forget it. Who can you mention a name or two that they were looking at?
Well, Fox was much more in the sort of John Stamos, gorgeous guy kind of mode at the time, younger, attractive. That's who we were really talking about. And, you know, John's an amazing actor, but it's not the same show that David conceived of. And Fox just would have never hired a character actor like Gandolfini to do what he did so brilliantly. So it really was ultimately the right move.
Can I ask you a quick X-Files question?
Yeah.
All right. The guys who created the X-Files,
Chris Carter.
Said that his favorite show when he was growing up was The Night Stalker with Darren McGavin, and he wanted to bring Carl Kolchak from The Night Stalker onto the show, but for some reason they couldn't get the rights, so they brought Darren McGavin in, but they had to give him a different name and stuff. Is that true? Do you know if that's true?
Yeah, well, Darren, that show was really the emotional antecedent for Chris.
Yeah.
To the X-Files. And when he pitched it to us, it was very much like, I want to do a show about government conspiracy, monsters, and alien abduction. Go!
You know, right.
Sort of like, okay, we'll do that. And he really wanted to do an homage to Darren McGavin and Kolchak. So we shoehorned him in as a character in some episodes.
I remember that.
Yeah. I did too.
And I kept thinking, why don't they just make him Kolchak? It's obvious that's who this guy's based on, but no, I guess it makes sense.
Yeah, we made him an FBI agent. Right. It was a whole different thing.
It's so fun when you watch that. I have like the VHS, the full set. I probably have the Blu-ray, and it's on TV, the old ones.
Yeah.
And you just are amazed at all the stars. Jack Black, Giovanni Ribisi. There were so many not really huge stars back then that are huge now. I loved watching them on
And
that.
Those guys you just mentioned were together, right? They were on the same
episode.
They
could change the stoplights with their minds. Yeah. I totally remember these things.
Yeah.
I'm a geek.
Can I ask a question? We're going through this boom right now here in town. Everything's great in terms of production. Chicago Fire, Chicago Med, Chicago PD. How did we pull that off? What went on behind the scenes that brought all those shows here to town?
It really was kind of a feat. We were really thrilled. We decided when we were developing a show about a firehouse that we wanted to do it in a blue-collar city, and we thought, what's a greater sort of quintessential American city than Chicago? And the state of Illinois gave us awesome tax breaks. Mayor Emanuel rolled out the red carpet for us. He gave us all kinds of great access to locations and just made it very smooth and easy. We also have a really cool thing where so many of the firefighters on their days off will come and play background on our shows. So our directors don't even have to direct. They just say action and they do what they do so brilliantly.
Great.
And we just thought it was such a great way to really pay honor to all these first responders in this city.
Yeah.
And then it proliferated into PD and Med, so we've got the Troika here now.
Really great shows, too.
Makes the city look good, too. It really does.
Oh, absolutely.
And we need
visually,
more of that.
We're out 3 or 4 days in the a week in the shooting schedule, so you really get a sense of place.
Yeah, good.
All right, there are a couple of films that we wanted to talk about, and I bet we don't remember. One of them was Grateful.
Yes.
It's
a short documentary about a woman who is suffering from ALS, and apparently it is just an emotional roller coaster ride that's playing tomorrow at the Evanston at 1 p.m. That's supposed to be really, really moving.
16 minutes. It's only 16 minutes long,
but it's apparently
such a
16
message.
That'll change your life and your awareness, and you will be so grateful for so much. And then there's another one called Leaps of Faith that's about an interfaith marriage, I'm sorry, which is kind of an interesting look into couples today.
Like your parents.
My parents, my dad
Catholic
Jewish, my mom Catholic,
right.
Which in the 60s was almost unheard of, but now it's becoming very much more commonplace.
Yeah, and then it was like a Shonda for the neighbors. And now it's like, whatever, we're all in this melting pot.
Yeah.
So,
isn't that strange how something that was so important to so many people, we become more accepting, thankfully.
Definitely.
Yeah.
The best place to find, there are so many films that are out there. It does run through March 17th. It has been running since the 1st, so some films have been shown. 6th annual JCC Chicago Jewish Film Festival. And if you'd like to find the schedule, and there are many venues throughout the city and suburbs, you can find out the times, the locations. Just go to jccfilmfest.org. It's been a pleasure talking to you on this International Women's Day.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here, and I'm here to honor all the women globally.
Absolutely. Deservedly so.
Yeah.
You're Danielle, not going to pitch her with some kind of television show or something?
That's when we go off the air.
I'm trying to stall so you can do it, Bill.
I got reams of stuff to show you. I'm so excited. We'll get something done. Danielle, thanks so much for being here. Have a good time at the festival.
Thank you both to you two and the JCC Chicago.
Thank Coming you. Up, the stories that matter with David Jennings from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio.